Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gopinatha Radha Gopinatha Radhe Jaya Gaura Nitai Jaya Gaura Nitai Gaura Nitai Jaya Gaura Nitai Jaya Shri Gopal, Shri Gopal, Shri Gopal, Jaya Shri Gopal. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev, 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 Gurudev. Gaur Premanandji. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Padivajvitarya Stotra Shishimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की जय वृंदावन मथुरा धाम की जय नवदीप मायापुर धाम की जय गंगा मई की जय जमुना मई की जय भक्ति देवी की जय तुलसी देवी की जय सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जय All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So we'll be reading from Canto 12. Chapter 8. Chapter entitled Markandeya's Prayers to Nar Narayan Rishi. Text 45. Sattvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya maya stiti layodaya hetavoshya. Liladrita yadapi sattvamai prashantyai. Nanye ninam vyasana moha piyaschayabhyam. S Sattvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya mayastiti layodaya hetavosya. Lila tritaya dapi sattvamai prashantiyai. Nanye ninam vyasanamoha viyashayabhyam. Sattvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya mayastiti layodaya hetavosya. Lila dritaya dapi sattvamai prashantyai. Nanye ninam vyasanamoha viyashchayabhyam. Tvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya mayastiti layodaya hetavosya. Lila dritaya dapi sattvamai prashantyai. Nanye ninam vyasanamoha viyashchayabhyam. Sattvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya. Nanye ninam vyasanamoha viyashchayabhyam. Sattvam rajastama iti shatavatma bandho. Maya mayastiti dayaga hetavosya. Lila dritaya dapi sattvamai prashantyai. Nanye ninam vyasanamoha viyashchayabhyam. No, that is, Sattvam, goodness. Raja, passion. Tama, ignorance. Iti, the modes of nature, thus termed. Isha, O Lord. Tava, your. Atmabandho, O supreme friend of the soul. Maya Maya, produced from your personal energy. Stiti Laya Udaya, of maintenance, destruction and creation. Hetava, the causes. Asya, of this universe. Lila, as pastimes. Drita, assumed. Yatapi, although, sattvamai, that which is in the mode of goodness. Prashantyai, for liberation. Na, not. Anye, the other two. Ninam, for persons. Vyasana, danger. Moha, bewilderment. Bhya, and fear. Cha, also. Yabhyam, from which. Translation and purport by humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O my Lord, O supreme friend of the conditioned soul, although for the creation, maintenance and annihilation of this world, you accept the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, which constitute your illusory potency, you specifically employ the mode of goodness to liberate the conditioned souls. The other two modes simply bring them suffering, illusion, and fear. Purport. The words Lila Drita indicate that the creative activities of Lord Brahma, the destructive activities of Lord Shiva, and the sustaining functions of Lord Vishnu are all pastimes of the absolute truth, Lord Krishna. But ultimately, only Lord Vishnu can award liberation from the clutches of material illusion, as indicated by the words Sattvamayi Prashantyai. Our passionate and ignorant activities cause great suffering, illusion, and fear for us and others. Therefore, they should be given up. One should become firmly situated in the mode of goodness and live peacefully on the spiritual platform. The essence of goodness is to renounce selfish interest in all one's activities and thus dedicate one's entire being to the Supreme Being, Lord Krishna, who is the source of all existence. Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam, Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha, Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha, E Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamai Maripriye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shrivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So today, in the verses, in the Bhagavatam verse, we are hearing about a very important aspect which Krishna emphasizes a lot also in the Bhagavad Gita, about the modes of nature, modes of material nature, and how they interact with each other. And here it is very explicitly said that under no circumstance, or under with every effort, we should try to get out of the clutches of the modes of ignorance and passion, and make every effort to try to go into the mode of goodness. But if we see that in today's world, why is it so difficult to go into the mode of goodness? No, because we don't hear the word goodness often. It's elsewhere. I mean, being good in this circle is another thing. But otherwise, in general, where do you find the word being good, even as a goal? That isn't really an aspiration. And if somebody says it, it's taken as a very lukewarm and a watered down aspiration, being good. While here, the mode of goodness is critical because as we understand that to transcend ultimately and come on the spiritual path and to embrace devotional service, to find a taste for it, would not happen, would not come without the without cutting the our links to the lower modes. And it's not that we jump from one to the other. It is actually that we have, even when we come in contact with devotees, we try to reduce the modes of passion and ignorance. So it's a battle which is constantly, it's not like one day effort or a momentary jump. It's something which a process will reduce the passion and the ignorance gradually. And that's where we see the challenges today. So the question of why it is difficult is because today the environment is such, you know, everywhere from childhood, from the time we are born, it's always the goal is to succeed, the material aspirations, for most people, tangible asset creation and achieving that, you know, whether it's certain wealth income, certain assets, certain degrees, certain power, prestige, in the eyes of others, society's image, it becomes so critical. It's a constant pressure. So by the time we are in our youth or we don't see any other option, we don't even have any other option. It's just like how in the West, most children are not even aware that they're, you know, the animals are their best friend, because children are natural allies with animals. So if they were told that this is on their plate, they wouldn't, but then it's too late because they're just brainwashed. So this is a danger which is constantly on our horizon, where we are under pressure, and the whole system and environment is such where there is no need for God. The word God, you rarely, even in spiritual terms today, there will be indirect discussions about consciousness and things, but to accept the word God, nowadays, I remember when I was young, the word God would always be written with a capital G. It's a very small thing, but today, in case it is even written anyway, it's with a small G. So there is every effort to reduce the importance or eliminate, or just, it is quite convenient to move it out, because otherwise it affects the kind of mentality that we would like to have. So this pressure is such that even if you don't have an inclination to have that passion to succeed, because not everyone would have. I mean, there are so many people who would otherwise be very happy to live a peaceful life if they're given the chance. That's the inclination, proclivity, just like in the ashrams and the where various devotees, various people have their own personal inclinations. But then the fear of failure is so much there, you know, that in the eyes of your friends, in the eyes of your friend, family and relatives, that you may be stamped a failure, you may be stamped a loser. So this pressure also acts so that, that's why we see sometimes people who are blessed with intelligence also, and they commit suicide because of these kind of pressures. So we are constantly living for other people's expectations. Sometimes, you know, our parents' dreams, you know, they may be living through us because they have not been able to achieve it. So, therefore, this fear of being inferior is actually always on us. And over time, one gets used to it, and then we think we have developed a taste because we don't know any other. Though it's an unnatural position for us to constantly live in a sense of insecurity, if not constantly, at least often. There is tension, there are ups and downs, and the ups also are where the avoidance of downs is ups. It is not an actual joy, but it's just the absence of downs that we see as an up. We find ways to move out of it. So this is described in the scriptures as just like an analogy given of the camel who is eating thorn, and then when it's sucking his own blood, and then that temporary sweetness that comes, that sickly sweetness of the blood, and thinks it's enjoying that sweetness. So this is a very apt description of what we may be going through, where we feel that this is the only way we have to go ahead. And therefore, in that backdrop, when we are in coming in touch with scriptures and a process of God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, it's we can't estimate the kind of good fortune that that we have when we come to this the familiarity of the scriptures, because the scriptures actually give us the philosophical understanding. And if you notice, the philosophy the philosophy, there are so many ways. I mean, we have all experienced that philosophy is perfect because it's coming from Krishna. But there is one dimension also which also confirms that, is that if you see over the last whatever years, when we see in society in general, not just in India and all over the world, that there is usually a lot of opposition to religion or even spirituality in the way we, and to acceptance of God as we discussed, saffron and so on. But if you see this, I've never seen anyone who has countered the philosophy. It is always about personalities, about somebody who has had some difficulty, some so-called guru, and then therefore they will pounce on that. So there is, you can say there is a whole crowd waiting, there's a whole intelligentsia waiting to see that they can pull someone down in, and then show religion in a bad light, you know, especially in entertainment and movies. But you will never see a single time, and nobody will ever counter. Otherwise, it's very easy if you are against. You could come into debates. You could bring this aspect of how Prabhupada beautifully reconciled explain the Bhagavad Gita and reconcile the impersonal and the personal. How, I mean, people can certainly, but you never find it. Which means that there is nothing that they can counter. Therefore, they will very slyly bring up various other aspects of individuals who have naturally got weaknesses and they succumb to it. I remember Jayadeva Maharaj was once asked, but why did you become a devotee? And in his very typical way, he immediately said, the philosophy left me with no alternative. So, which actually says, you know, that, and he's such a, you know, he's a master of the scriptures. So it confirms that you just have no choice because it is the perfect philosophy. Either accept it or it is too inconvenient, that's another aspect. But it is not, you just can't counter it because it is the truth. So we are very fortunate in that sense, and Prabhupada has really simplified so many aspects, you know, very, very intelligently. He is always, if you see his, hear his lectures, especially in the, at all times actually, but more so in the 60s and 70s, in the early late 60s, he would always be first talking about that you're not this body, you're not this body, you're not this body. You know, he will say this from the, even in the 70s, I mean, after 7-8 years, this was one critical aspect, not this body, because he needed to hammer this point that we are not this body, we are soul, we are atma, and then there's a jivatma who's different. Now, this is so fundamental that if it just becomes an anchor in our life to understand that there is a different personality, a superior personality, we may think that, well, because the understanding on a mental level and understanding as a realization is a vast difference. So he kept on and on emphasizing, but it was a very simple point. You can't counter it. But at the same time, he drilled it into devotees that you're not this body, so that at least no matter what our failings are, but understanding that there is God in every aspect of life, because that's the basis of our lifestyle, that we need to see that Krishna is everywhere. So that was one very simple thing. Then when he talked about the material universe, he made it very simple that how all the 8 elements are present within the body, and the 8 elements are all over. So the body is a sample of the universe. So he said, actually, this is how, like a great banyan tree, you can't, you know, the seed is there, you can't see it, but then it goes into a tree. So he gave examples which are so perfect. Like when he was walking at Los Angeles beach, on morning walk, and the Pacific Ocean was there. So he wanted to make the point about the there is Krishna is the remote cause, and then there's an immediate cause. And this is a vital point, because this is where the scientists really fail, because they only look for the immediate cause. What is the immediate cause to this, which is just so short-term minded. So it's just like the Pacific Ocean, he said, see how it is calm. But when the superior force, which is the air, when that comes, and then the waves will come. So then that, but without the superior force, it will be remaining calm. And then there will be another force, which will be above the air, and then another force, another one, that goes up to Krishna. So similarly, he said that for us also, in our lifestyle, in our world, we will find that we have control over small things, then something more, then something more, something more, and then, you know, Krishna will be at the end of it. So giving simple examples was, you know, his perfect way of reconciling the philosophical challenges. And then the potency of chanting the Hare Krishna, and the, how chanting is so important in the Maha Mantra, so critical. Again, he said one is the realization, that we realize when we actually chant and we see the benefits. But he also mentioned that from the scriptures, he said that you first develop a little faith and take the process. But then the process of chanting itself will establish your faith a little more and little more and little more. So he said when you have Shraddha in the beginning, that is Adho Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sang. So the first Shraddha is very nebulous. You know, there is some faith because we have understood, we liked it, but we like many aspects of what we see and hear. But it is not strong enough. It can be easily... But to come to Nishta, we have to go through the Anartha Nivritti stage. So he gave the example that how you have a banana tree and a banyan tree. So banana tree is something which can be easily knocked over. So that is like Shraddha. And banyan tree is something which is so big and so powerful, it can't be... you can't... So that's the kind of stage that we need to have firm faith. So, you know, people could really relate to it. Also, he mentioned about, while you were talking of chanting, he said one is, you will see the benefit, but he also said that if you are not feeling the benefits, I mean, if you are not, after some years of chanting also, and you still wonder, so it could be that maybe there is deep-rooted many years of many lifetimes also of karma which you have to face, and that's that you have to have patience and continue the process. But also he said that it is possible that it is quite likely that we may be also while we are following the process, there are the offenses that we may be creating, and he used the word titillating. So he's saying we may be titillating those other senses which actually harm the process of chanting. For instance, when we, all the distractions that are there, the diversions that may be there. So while we are chanting and while we continue to follow those diversions, we will see that there is, so you, the river is going downstream, and then you are also blocking the river. So that means there is no process of flow. So therefore, but then he again also said that you should take heart from your own experiences. That just like everyone, I mean, especially he was telling the Western devotees, because most of them were Western when they joined him from the West. So he's saying, like you, when you were eating meat, somehow meat eating was relatively easy to give up. Most people, almost all, you know, did not have to fall back, even if. But so he said that you can see that okay, the process has worked, and here is something where just by following it, you have avoided meat eating completely. But on the other hand, there are some more challenges like sensual pleasure, sexual pleasures, which are much more deep rooted and which may have difficulties, and that's where you may be titillating your senses. Then you just continue the process, and then have to identify whether you are nourishing those kind of secretly you know, confidentially kind of, you know, encouraging those diversions, and then it's going to affect. So he could, you know, even though he was at a highest level, but he brought the philosophy to such a level where he could explain and even bring up the challenges that are there. And then eventually, if the individual has a challenge, like individual may have difficulty, there is no room to say that you can't blame anyone. It is only ourselves. So, and then of course he said also finally he said that the most important thing that how can, in spite of having all the challenges, associating with devotees is like-minded people is the best way. Because he said if you develop a higher taste, then the lower taste will go away. So this was again a very simple way to put it, and this is something which almost all devotees would identify with, that somehow, say, meat eating has gone, because there the whole process was completely followed, and there, let's say, the boil has been completely removed because you applied the medicine. But there may be some others, like maybe sexual desires, which may be there, especially, you know, in the younger generation. So if that is the case, then see, the medicine is not fully applied because you are having the distractions. But apply the medicine of the chanting of the holy name, avoiding the, and associating with higher, like-minded people who have a higher taste. So those who have got a higher taste and you go with them, then you will also get a higher taste. And once you get a higher taste, you will see that the lower taste falls off. That's the best way to drop the lower taste. And therefore, it is, they say that you are known by whom you associate with. So these are the ways of Prabhupada's way of strengthening the philosophical base, which really helped to gradually for devotees to try to embrace being in the mode of goodness and see that we don't succumb to our other pressures, our other tendencies. So he also hammered the point about that spiritual life means simple living and high thinking. So when he, when the first time Srila Prabhupada met John Lennon, the famous Beatle, and his wife, that time girlfriend, she became his wife, Yoko Ono. So he asked, the first question he asked actually when they met is that, what philosophy do you follow? That was an often question that Prabhupada would ask, because they would, in many places, especially in England where he stayed a long time, devotees would bring, you know, all various personalities, Arnold Toynbee and many philosophers and historians and so on, cardinals and so on. So Prabhupada would always talk, what is your philosophy? So he asked John Lennon, what is your philosophy? So he said, well, we don't have a philosophy, we just live. So that is typical of the modern mindset, where you just live, you don't think for the future. So, because John Lennon was a very exceptional personality, he was very brilliant. And recently I was told that when he was only 5 or 6 years old in school, this is to show how sharp he was, that when they were asked by the teacher, what would you like to be? So all the various people, somebody said, I want to be a pilot, I want to be an engineer, and this. So he said, I want to be happy. And the teacher said, no, you're wrong. But he refused to accept it. He said, no, I want to be happy. So a person who could think at the age of 5 or 6, I mean, he could think. In spite of that, he had experimented various things, and of course, he was the one who gave his estate for 2 months. George Harrison actually arranged it for Srila Prabhupada, so that he could stay there. And that's when he met John Lennon. So he had an interest, but you know, unfortunately, his wife didn't have any interest, and that really, you know, pushed him out. But even such a personality as him, who had a lot of reasoning, thinking, his lifestyle philosophy was that we just live. So with that, you know, then we don't go beyond the tomorrow or the day after. It's just as the things flow, as what we like, we are on a sensual platform. And how the senses give us a direction, that's the way we would move ahead. And also, subsequently we see that one of the major challenges we find today is that, which is more apparent in the last, say, few decades, especially after Prabhupada left, is that modern society tries to depersonalize everything. They want to remove the personality aspect. You know, and it is not so, you will not read articles on that or theory. It is just the perception which comes, you know, after living a long time, and then serious people or people who have given a lot of thought, and then they come and then you say, yes, that's the fact. But then it seems very innocent and harmless. So over time, it has crept in such a way that, like say from the issue of evolution itself, the theories, you know, where there is all kinds of theories, but there is no place for God. Then even in our entertainment, you know, science fiction, and you have all the heroes, whether it's Bollywood or Hollywood, all the heroes, there's good versus evil. Good will prevail, but the good is the human being. I mean, there's no God. There is no credit to God. There is nobody like God. It's just like, that means the emphasis is that gradually, you know, the human beings ultimately control their destiny, and that they can find their own solutions, and that they are superior. So there are superior people, but we can be that person. Essentially, there is no other person. This is the central force of today's thing, and very, very intelligently, and very, I would say crookedly intelligent way, how they gradually bring that division of understanding, that slowly move the personality of God out of the picture. And that's why Prabhupada kept on talking of personality of Godhead, personality of Godhead. I mean, I never heard this word, supreme personality of Godhead. Now, when you say God, but he kept on saying supreme personality of Godhead. So we can now see that how he could understand what we're up against. So these are the challenges that we have. And and the reason why we need to worry about this is because when we are constantly looking at our immediate issues, then that preoccupies our mind. So we don't realize it, but then we are in bondage. This is like that bondage which that famous lecture of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, that prison house without walls. He had given that, where he talks about the world as a prison house, but you don't see, there are no bars, there are no windows, there are no guards, there are no stoppage. I mean, you're going around, so you're saying, where's the prison? But that bondage is because we are bound by our own thinking, our own attachments, and in this case, like we say, that we are just bound by, or we are trapped by our own expectations, which will really take us deeper and deeper into a malaise. And then that becomes so important for us, all the various needs of our own body, that we are on the immediate issue, and then gradually that. So then we stop thinking of others. There is no, at least initially there used to be room for family or room for community, room for society. There is some sacrifice. There is, you think of others. Even, and there was always some piety there. That is the 50, 100 years ago. Now that is gradually gone. So by this method, what happens is that becomes an individual pursuit. It becomes, for me, gradually what is most important for me. So in India, it may not be so apparent because though in the cities you do see it, but in the West, it is very open, and that is what they pursue as what they call freedom. An individual is supreme in every aspect, what I would like to do. In which case, that means you don't have any rules. You don't follow any regulations. Everything goes. You know. So therefore, now, since several years, many countries in the world have legalized marijuana and some drugs. In the thing that, you know, if you leave it, give it over the counter, anyone can just go and buy it. You don't need any license or anything. Because they feel that then the excesses will be stopped because they're craving for it. So why don't you just give it? Of course, illicit sex, the word illicit has been cancelled out. So there is, all kinds of experimentations. Alcohol and, other things are supported by gambling, are supported by governments. All over the world, including in India, because that is a very major revenue generation. So the mentality of the world gradually has come to the level where economic status and development becomes most important, and then if that is the pursuit to happiness, which is the link to material pursuit. As we said, that the modern society is only looking at that, putting pressure that you need to succeed, you need to succeed. If you're not, then there's something wrong with you. There's no room. Even if you, in a few cases, it may not be. People may be living simply. Somebody will say that there is a communist way of living, communist thinking. But there also there is high amount of rigidity. In fact, the hatred towards religion is even more, because they pursue a very, can say, what they would call revolutionary, but what is actually, in many cases, a very destructive, violent form, where there will be intolerance. So the fact that to accept and cooperate and cohabitate, acceptance of God, acceptance of Krishna, and then seeing through his eyes that there are different individuals, personalities, different species of life, this becomes natural. But without that, everything is the way I see it, and what is, you know, in my circle of convenience or what is outside my circle of convenience. And then slowly that becomes a minimum need, you know. So basically, this mode of passion is synonymous with, you know, having results. That unless I, you, it's result oriented, there must be something to show, whether it is business or politics or sport or any aspect of our life, that a tangible demonstration is necessary. So that gradually leads to, you know, corruption or greed, lust, you know, fanaticism. Today's 26/11. Which is infamous 12 years ago. So you can, it's an example of the mode of ignorance of a very high level, you know, with the terrorist attacks that happened. So this corruption, sometimes people say that, well, now there are systems in the West which are, that there's no corruption monetarily. But they want to limit it to a corruption of money, because they have set the whole finance system of the world. Whether it's the World Bank, whether it's the IMF, I mean, all the systems are set, which is fine, which is good. So yes, the monetary aspect may not be there, but corruption of the soul and corrupting the values is of which it is of more sinister basis, and that is something which is very dangerous to the individuals. So while as an aspiring devotee, we would live with all aspects. You know, we don't sit in judgment, and each individual is too small to do anything in the world. What to speak of, this world is just a tiny drop in the whole universe. And what to speak of, this universe is just one among millions of universes. So there is, I mean, you can't even imagine how small the powers are with an individual. But that power that we have is what we can do to help the our circle of influence, people around us, how we live our life. And that is something which we need to protect. So we can live with whatever happening. It's not that today, 30 years ago, 50 years ago also, there were other issues. 70, 80 years ago, there were wars. So this is going to be Kali Yuga. So if you see from the eyes of Krishna, the world is going to go for the next millions of years, going to go through several upheavals and so on, up and down, in which we may have our only tiny, you can say, a blink of the eye, lifestyle, total quantum, which of maybe 30, 50, 70 years. But in that, how we live that life becomes important. So therefore, anything that we do must have values attached to it. So a common, this without values, it, you know, the automatically this material success or material pursuits will really increase our pride and false prestige. Like in the story of Kartavirya Arjuna, a very, very powerful king, so powerful that he even defeated Ravan. Imagine, Kartavirya Arjuna was actually a disciple of Dattatreya, who was an incarnation of God, and who was son of Atreya Muni and Ansuya, Sati Ansuya. So this kind of personality, and when he got the benediction from Dattatreya for 1,000 arms, his power was such that there was nobody, including Ravan. And when Ravan got, it's said that he, the story goes that he demonstrated, just to show off to his friends, he just stopped the water flow in the river. And Ravan was down, somewhere further down, and he was also conquering lands, and so was, and he did not know that Ravan was there, Kartavirya. So Ravan got upset and he waged the war. And Kartavirya Arjun, not only finished him off, but he actually tied him up like a monkey and put him in jail in prison for a year. And then Ravan's grandfather, Pulastya Muni, came and begged for his release, or asked for his release, and he was released. And then, of course, they became friends, you know, allies, as how we see today, you know, so the relations change. But the point is, this was the kind of power he had. But then when one day when he went to Jamadagni Rishi's ashram, and he saw, he went to tens of thousands of his soldiers, and he came unexpectedly. And a simple sadhu, very high personality, was there. He couldn't, and still he, Jamadagni was such a wonderful host that he fed them. Within minutes he had a great feast and everything arranged. So Jamadagni, Kartavirya Arjun was so shocked. He said, how is it possible? And through his minister, he found out that he has this Kamadhenu cow, descendant of the Surabhis. So, now this is a lesson for us where a normal person, when somebody does something for you, you'll be grateful. But when we are covered by false pride, instead of gratitude, envy comes. So he felt, I need to have it. So this, if passion is unbridled, the danger is that it will push us to take what I want. Everything is for me. Me or immediate my, whoever's in my alliance or my family or whoever's with me. But it is me who's a, through me it goes to the others. So therefore he became very envious and he took away the cow, Kamdhenu and his calf. And Parshuram was the youngest son of Jamadagni, Lord Parshuram. And he came and he found out and he went and he challenged them. Of course he defeated and killed Kartavirya Arjuna. But there are many lessons in that because as Radhanath Swami Maharaj had explained that Jamadagni was not happy because he said, this is the king, you should not have done this. He was telling his son. So Parshuram accepted it and he did not challenge, did not justify it. Even though he had reasons to justify how much harm he was doing, he took the whatever penance he had to go all over to various holy places. So this is the lifestyle that Lord Parshuram demonstrated. How we should accept, dutifully his father's request. And on the other hand, Kartavirya Arjuna's behavior was such where he had everything for him. He had all the power, wealth, unimaginable. But then because he became so intoxicated, and this is not something which is rare. It is a very commonplace thing. Because he is in a infinitely higher level of power. But whatever little influence we have, or whatever wealth we have, we just need to have more and more and more. And that more and more, the drive, becomes very important for us. And that causes anxiety in the mind, that causes us to pursue a lifestyle which actually becomes a virtual trap. Because we feel that my solution is only a material solution. And in the absence of God, or even if we are a devotee, but we nominally accept His presence, okay, I'm chanting, but that's my you can say, allowance to Krishna, that's done. It's compartmentalized and my 2 hours is done. But my rest of my life, I am in control. I have to find the solution. Of course we have to find. Of course we have to do everything. But we see Krishna's hand in everything. Krishna's hand is one which can make or break. I mean, whatever he wants will happen. So just like in Prabhupada's time, it's not, how did all this happen? You can say there was a tremendous amount of, motivation and drive by the devotees. So you need some passion in many occupational cases also. But then that has to be subservient and that has to be under the guidance of greater devotees and gurus particularly. So like Prabhupada himself, I mean, how much he achieved. But and his disciples also. Like he sent the devotees to London. Then he had the Chaitanya Charitamrita was published in 2 months, which was otherwise going to take 17 months. How did it happen? So they really, worked 18-hour days and they worked, but it was all for pleasing Prabhupada and therefore pleasing Krishna. And it was under guidance and it wasn't with envy. Yes, Krishna, Prabhupada encouraged transcendental competition. What he meant is that to try to do better, but not at the expense of bringing someone down. This is very nicely summed up in, we all have experienced it when Radhanath Swami Maharaj, many years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, one of the book marathon results were declared in the end of the month, and that was a time when we had reached, I think, 70 or 80,000 books, and everyone was very joyous.
And we were now saying that next year we want to go up to 1 lakh books. And then the prizes were distributed. Maharaj was here and, you know, it was a packed hall. And Maharaj was giving out to all the major book distributors. And names were read out and all. It was a very exciting period that time. And Maharaj made one statement which sums up the whole philosophy and all that we've talked about. And he said, I pray that next year we reach 1 lakh books and that we are last. It was an astonishing and a spontaneous situation which summed up everything. That we should do our best. But he said, I pray that we are last. And I hope that others also do well. So, if our competition helps others to increase, that's wonderful. But just like there was competition among gopis also. So, not to destroy people, so the pursuit is not us, the pursuit is the goal which is in line with, with what our guru or our senior devotees want us to do that. And then we have many examples of in Prabhupada's own time where we see that efforts were made. They may have failed materially. Temples were closed or devotees could not achieve. But then Prabhupada would say, Krishna sees the struggle. Krishna is not seeing the result. Result is in Krishna's hands. So what is the same thing with the chanting? We have to just struggle, and the struggle is the process. So our process is means we have to not give up the struggle. In everything, the struggle is to be embraced and accepted. And how we follow it has to be streamlined with association devotees and guidance of the seniors. So so it reconciles very nicely when we say that without Krishna's mercy, not a blade of grass moves. But we are not fatalists, because we have our own activity, we have a minute independence, we exercise it to the maximum extent, but we acknowledge the presence of God. Today what happens is that the successes that have happened today in all over the world to various people, maybe scientific discoveries, some new iPhone model and so on, various models may have come and they'll be selling a billion pieces or whatever. So, yes, we can see that there is Krishna has given someone, we can admire the intelligence of someone which has come from Krishna. But from those people's point of view, would they not see that there is a set of circumstances that come, a set of people and how they come? Nothing happens by accident. Or certain situation, certain timing. Like Prabhupada went in the West in 1965, it was just amazing in the history, in the time of history, how he just reached at just the right time. Krishna wanted it. Similarly, on a material level, so somebody succeeds, 1,000 others fail. But the acknowledgement of Krishna, the acknowledgement, the credit to Krishna is missing. That is the big difference between spiritual and material. That where, whatever we do, incidentally we may succeed, we may not succeed, but even if we have wild successes, which are anyway very, very infinitesimal in the whole, you know, compared to the successes of Kartavirya, Arjuna, you know, the people who rule the entire universe, Hiranyakashipu and all. I mean, we don't even want to mention what kind of. But still, by our standards, it's a huge success. Even those successes, if we do not acknowledge Krishna's hand, then that is our great offense, and then that puts us in the trap of competing with Krishna. That we are inconvenienced by his presence, we don't want him, and therefore we go into passion fully. Otherwise, the passion that may be there in Kshatriyas, the passion that may be there in Vaishyas, they may be wanting to do, but if they're doing it for a purpose, they're doing it for pleasing the Lord or his devotees, and that too, you know, without destroying or offending others, is something which is what needs to be encouraged. And in the end, if I would say that an analogy with our temple, that just like our temple over the last 32 years, you know, everything has changed in one sense, you know, externally, not a patch remains practically, but at the same time, the spirit or the spiritual vibrancy that His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj wanted to, did start with in here, that is what we are trying to strive. You know, now there may be 30, 50 devotees at that time, now there may be 10,000, 20,000, whatever. The spirit remains the same while everything is changed externally. So same way with us also, our life may change over so many externally. Occupation may change, residence may change. We also have changed. We were youth at one time, and now we have children and grandchildren. Some relatives may have left the world. We may have financial difficulties, but then, or we may have financial successes. So many things may have changed. Everything keeps changing. It's a turmoil. But internally, we have to keep that steadiness, that patience that is needed, that it is whatever the life is, whatever number of years we have, that is something which how we lead is steadily continue to remain in the Krishna conscious movement, whatever difficulties. That is what Prabhupada wanted. People had difficulties. Prabhupada had the vision to lay down, like when he wrote down the seven rules of ISKCON in 1965, 55 years ago, 54 years ago. Imagine in 1966 when there was nobody, he wrote those down, practically he set up a society. And today if you read it, every word is so relevant. So he had that vision. But at the same time he was so practical that anyone had difficulties, some of his sannyasis had difficulties, he would cry and tell them that whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. That's your lifeline. Because he could see that. So same with us, that for us, whatever difficulties may be there, disputes, difficulties with other devotees, other temples, personality issues, we also go on our ego trips. This is going to happen. But if we are all, if this current is going on, but if we are all in the same pond or in the same tank, the same aquarium, then, eventually there will be smoothness because we are allowing others to take care of our life. So that should be our aspiration, that even if I have my own aberrations and weaknesses at times, it should not be, should pray that it should not be such that it, number one, that it hurts others. But even if it does, that at least I can rectify it and that I am still within the family of ISKCON. So that whatever my pursuit of being in the mode of goodness and my tendencies that are objectionable to it that may come up, gradually be removed over time. So we'll end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Do you have question answer, Jen?